Karlsson, Karlsson, världens bästa Karlsson. Karlsson, Karlsson, hoj här kommer Karlsson. Karlsson, Karlsson, ingen faktiskt, ingen annan Karlsson spelar jag så bra som mig.
Karlsson, Karlsson, Karlsson scores!
Karlsson, Karlsson,
yes! Welcome everybody to another episode of the Keeping Karlsson Fantasy Hockey Podcast, the longest running fantasy hockey podcast in the world, hosted by two guys who have to figure out something to do over the next 12 days. It'll be like, what, like 9 p.m. I finished watching a show with my wife. I'm going to pick up my phone and what? Like, what am I looking at? I guess I could look at like what happened in Four Nations, but if it doesn't affect my fantasy team, I'll check if there were any injuries. Brian, actually, the thing I mainly care about over these next 12 days, I want a Kaprizov update. I traded for Kaprizov. I want a miracle like recovery tweet about Kaprizov popping up on my phone. That'll make me so happy. But anyways, I'm your host, Dylan Dubrowski, and with me to break down the previous week of NHL action, and then looking forward to, I guess, a couple weeks down the road here, it is my good pal, the fantasy hockey robot, the poop-out prognostication, the IPP MVP himself, Brian Kahn. Brian, how's it going?
Hey, I'm good. I'm okay with the break, Elon. And may I brag for a moment?
Yeah, granted.
Thank you. I just clinched a couple playoff spot. I'm first place in my division.
Amazing.
13-5 record. I'm one up on Derek. I'm one win up on Derek and Marcus, who are tied for second and third. But there's the 4, 5, 6, like, and below, they're charging right now. So I've got to keep going.
Doesn't matter to you.
This
You're
is
clinched.
And I like part of the brag is also the acknowledgement that like, this is easily the most successful couple season I've had, probably since I won. Like, I think the best I've done is like maybe a win or two above 500. And most seasons, I'm actually competing to be at the top of the consolation bracket and get my bye in the consolation playoffs, which has worked. Like, I've had success there, but I haven't even been in the playoff race the last couple seasons. So there's my little brag. My little fun observation about you and your Kaprizov injury thing, like, this is your new favorite. Ever since Brad Marchand came back, like, to start the season or like a week in, remember, he was going to miss like 3 months and you're like, he's going to come back. I feel it. And I'm skeptical. I'm like, Elon, he's getting older. Like, why would they lie? And you're like, I don't know. Hockey players just heal faster.
And there was also a Pasternak thumb thing that he came back a lot faster.
Yeah, it was like was it the same season even that both of those things happened? So I love this new theory of yours. It's I unfortunately don't share the same optimism. Even
you think he's out. You said that when we talked about Kaprizov before, you were like, they say 4 to 6 weeks. It could be out for the season for all we know.
They didn't say 4 to 6 weeks. They say at least 4 weeks. If they said 4 to 6 weeks, I would have been comforted to see like the high end, like the ceiling placed on the recovery period.
This is a downer way to start the show.
But it's nice that a couple weeks are happening over the Four Nations Cup. And I hope for your sake, he's back really soon. And I think it was really bold of you to tempt fate as you did. But these are the moves that made you a Kakupful ultimate champion once upon a time and might bring you back into the fold once again. You got to do something.
We'll look, like, I was in first place in the division, not clinched like you. I figured, I guess I should look towards the playoffs. I had Alex Barkov. Florida doesn't have the best playoff schedule. I was especially looking at the semifinals, which again is like presumptuous. Like, I have to get to the semifinals, but I also figured I got to play to win, right? And I was looking at the semifinals. There's only two teams that play two times, Boston and Florida, and I have Pasternak and Barkov. So I'm going in with like two of my best players right away, barely playing. I looked like most of my other guys are playing three times, while there's a bunch of other teams playing four times. It just looked like that's going to be an obstacle I won't be able to overcome. So it's like, I know I have to get there, but also I'm playing to win, right? I'm not playing to come in sixth or fourth or whatever it is. So I just figured I'll make a move to help me in the playoffs, and then I have to trust myself to get myself there. So yeah, I traded Barkov for Kaprizov, who will be back a lot sooner than Brian thinks. I could feel it. But yeah, this first week without Barkov did not go well. I was coming off like three straight weeks of like having among the top score in my Kakupful division, and then last week I had like the worst score in the division. It went really poorly, and now I'm not 13-5 like you. I'm 12-6. Not clinched, but I'm still in first, just barely, but a couple losses and I could be out of the playoffs. So I'm going to have to work hard at this. But yeah, man, this, I really enjoyed that run of, you know, Pasternak scoring like 2-3 goals every single game. You know, Tomáš Hertl scoring all the time. Adam Fantilli, our boy Mo. Like, last week, they all kind of took a bit of a break. But I feel, you know, they're going to have this break. You know, the Nations Tournament, and they're going to come back strong. They're going to help me get into the playoffs, and Kaprizov's going to come back. It's going to be beautiful. I can feel it. But Brian, I got a whole show here that we've prepped for today. Of course, the diehards know that we're a day late, so apologies. We did announce on the last episode that we were going to take a day off. I had plans to watch the Super Bowl. Pretty dull, I got to say. And the bros that I was hanging with at the bar telling me before the game how, like, Mahomes is so amazing. Mahomes is so amazing. I watched this Mahomes guy. Interception. Like, this is your guy? He stinks. So anyway, I'm ready to talk about some players that actually
hot football
produce.
Take. Oh, like, okay, Dylan, good one.
Dylan Gunther, that's a guy, you know, that you can rely on to get you points. So why don't we start there? Let's also just mention quickly, presented by DauberHockey.com. Amazing website. I love it. But yeah, so Dylan Gunther, we're starting with injuries here. He's back and he is insane. He had an incredible week for the Utah Hockey Club. Gunther, we were a little bit nervous, right? Or at least, I don't know, nervous, but like, you know, we were positing on the pod that maybe, you know, Cooley's out. You know, Gunther's not going to have like the best line mates. He came back to play with Barrett Hayton and Michael Carcone. I'd be like, I don't know. That doesn't sound that amazing. But it didn't matter because he is Dylan freaking Gunther. In his four games, he had two goals and an assist versus Philly. Then he scored against Columbus. Then an assist versus Carolina. And then one goal and one assist yesterday versus Washington. His shot totals were crazy each of those games, like 6-7, 6-5. So Gunther is a hero. He definitely won people their fantasy weeks last week. I know there were a few people that left him in their IR because, you know, maybe like ease him in, like, you know, a couple busy days for the games he was playing. And that was clearly a mistake in hindsight because he came back super strong. Sometimes you think these players are going to have a little rust. He had been out since January 8th was the last time he had played. So almost a month. But yeah, he's incredible. I don't even know like what question I'm going to ask you, but feel free to jump on board complimenting how great Dylan Gunther has been.
Okay, I will. Dylan Gunther has been amazing. One thing that's really impressive, and you can hope for this for Kaprizov, Elon, when he comes back early, see, I'm helping manifest. I don't know, like whenever a player comes back from an injury, I feel like usually when we're talking about them, and tell me if you think I've got this wrong, it's like, yeah, you know, we'll give them a couple games. Maybe they're getting eased in or they haven't done anything in their first two games back. But don't sweat it. Like, they got to find their feet and get back in the swing of things. I don't know that we ever see. Like, I'd like to see an example of someone coming back from an injury as hot as Dylan Gunther has. Four goals in four games along with three assists. So that's 7 points in four games since returning from injury. Two of those points coming on the power play. The thing is that four goals in four games, I bet he's not, you can't do that sustainably. He's taken six shots a game on average in those four games, and he's shooting just over 17%, which is kind of in line with Dylan Gunther's usual shooting percentage. We're just looking at a stud here, everybody. So Elon, you asked me to join in complimenting Dylan Gunther. Here I am doing that. He's 21 years old. Remember, this is his first full season, and Gunther's up to 20 goals, 21 assists for 41 points in 44 games. Last season, he played 45 games, had 35 points. So, hey, he's taking a nice step forward here in a full season, and Gunther's currently on a 76-point pace. Now, I know what you're going to ask me next. Brian, can he keep that up? Is that for real?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, you already have your answer. I think he can. Like, sure, I see his on-ice shooting percentage is a little high, but if he's elite, then it might not actually be high if he's a great converter, and like his line mates have been pretty good too. On the power play, also on-ice shooting, a titch high, but still, I'm not taking anything away from Dylan Gunther here. I think 76-point pace rest of season, absolutely doable. And I think the question now, Elon, is how high next year for Dylan Gunther? And I'm going to, as we go through the episode, there are some guys who were drafted in places where we might expect to get Gunther next season.
Would you rather?
Yeah, it's gonna be interesting. But like Dylan Gunther sure seems like someone who's gonna go in, I don't know, your top 50 picks next year.
You would think so. You know me, I'm a sucker for these shots. So if he can keep this up, like he hasn't been shooting like this like all season. A lot of the, you look at the game log, there's a lot of ones, zeros, twos. But if he can keep this up, this is a whole other ball game. So we'll see how that goes. While we're on the subject of Utah, with Gunther scorching, my guy Nick Schmaltz has totally disappeared. And it's very frustrating. I feel like I'm jinxing myself, Brian. I'm like making fantasy harder for myself. Because I said a few months back when Travis Sanheim was hot, I was like, I'm just never going to drop this guy. He's great. I'm just going to keep him on my roster, not even think about him again. Sanheim went so cold, I ended up dropping him. And then I added Nick Schmaltz a little while back, and I was bragging, like, I can't believe I got this guy. He's going to be on my roster for the rest of the season. He's incredible. He's so good. All of a sudden, you look at the game log, he's totally disappeared. No points in five games for Nick Schmaltz. This past week, another one of these people that really let me down, you know, I was like banking on my team to keep up what they were doing before, but Schmaltz, like, one shot game, a zero shot game. He had a cardio session. That's like no points, no fantasy points. Against Carolina. I guess, yeah, Carolina's good. I don't know. So should I be worried, Brian? Is this like only Gunther or Schmaltz can be awesome? They can't both be awesome at the same time? They're not even on the same line.
Yeah, no, I think they can both be awesome at the same time. But when we talked last time, should you recall, about Schmaltz being on a hot streak, I mentioned that there was a cold streak before that, and a hot streak before that, and a cold streak before that. And I tried to make the point that Nick Schmaltz comes and goes in waves. Like, he's not a super consistent producer.
All right. Like, so you're saying for sure after the Four Nations, he's going to be back hot again. Perfect. Thank you.
Let's hope so. Yeah, this is what he does. And like, it doesn't mean that this is what should happen. Like, it doesn't make sense logically to me that somebody would produce in waves and be good for a while and then take a break and be good for a while and then take a break. But that has been Schmaltz's pattern for at least two, three seasons now. And so I'm not shocked that he's gone quiet. I wouldn't give up completely on him. I would wait for the next wave.
All right. And then one last thing I'll just mention on Utah. Sean Durzi has been practicing with the team. I'm guessing it seems like he's going to be back after the break. Utah plays Saturday and Sunday out of that break, which is in like 12 days from now. We already talked about Durzi last week. We don't need to revisit, but not too bad to, if you could stash him and then potentially get two games right out of the gate. Like, we'll see how he does. Sergachev's been awesome. I don't think that Sergachev is getting bumped from that top power play. That's for sure. But just a guy to keep your eye on. Let's go to another outry here, Brian. The Ottawa Senators got Linus Ullmark back in the net, which was very helpful to them in their last couple of games. Not that they won, they still lost, but they really didn't let Ullmark ease in. He had two games with huge workload. He had 37 shots against Tampa, and he let in only three goals, so a good save percentage, but the Lightning beat Ottawa 4-3, and then Ullmark played on Saturday against Florida. Ottawa got spanked 5-1, four goals against for Ullmark, but he had a 9.15 save percentage in that game. Florida took 47 shots. What are the Sens doing? You can't do that and win. So anyways, not his fault, but moving forward, I assume he's now he's going to go play in this tournament, and then hopefully he'll come back still somewhat fresh, and then maybe Ottawa can shore things up a little bit defensively so they can start winning games again here.
Yeah, Ottawa really needs to step their game up. Trying to win by giving up that many shots. Like, I wonder if, Linus Ullmark came back and Ottawa's like, I guess we can let loose now, even though Merilainen had been, as we've already established, played really well. And Ullmark basically has to keep up what Merilainen was doing, which is absolutely possible. But I don't know if Ottawa got a little too comfortable. Ullmark had been doing pretty well, but he had a rough 6 minutes against Florida where he gave up three quick goals, all at 5-on-5. That hurt. And the Sens dropped two straight to Tampa in their division, who now the Sens trail Tampa by 4 points. Tampa has a game in hand, and that might end up settling exactly whether, Ottawa or Tampa gets that three seed, finishes third in the Atlantic. So Ottawa's probably duking it out for the wild card now with Detroit, Columbus, Boston, the Rangers. The good news for Sens fans is that the Sens are the only team of that group with a positive goal differential of all of that whole group. We're working for that one of those two wild card spots, and Linus Ullmark should be a big part of that continuing.
Okay, and Brian, next outjury, another goalie that returned. Anthony Stolarz had missed a ton of time for the Leafs, and just like Dylan Gunther and Linus Ullmark, came back without any rust, had a great first game against Seattle, which Jeremy talked about on the last short shift, saying he was hoping that the Kraken were going to blow him up. Well, they didn't. Stolarz faced 27 shots, only let in one goal. So the Leafs picked up the 3-1 win there. And then Joseph Woll came in to play against the Canucks in the next game. And he did fine as well, letting in two goals. So that, just as they discussed on the last short shifts, it seems pretty clear they're just going to go back to 50-50. So definitely bummer for the Woll managers, who were enjoying a goalie that was playing all the time and doing like really well. I feel like there's no reason not to expect just 50-50 moving forward. That's what's best for the Leafs. And like, both of these goalies seem to be really settling in as really great options. It'll be fun to see if they can both stay healthy, what the Leafs will do in the playoffs. But that's still a couple months away.
Yeah. So we'll see which one can take the lead. Like, both have had their struggles with staying healthy, right? So maybe it is a recipe of rest the rest of the way. My guess is that neither one becomes a volume starter. But if one does, Stolarz probably has the edge as the guy that Toronto, I think, wants leading them into the playoffs.
You think so?
I don't know. Well, you know, Woll, I mean,
played the first game of the year
at the start. Yeah, and but like, you were really down on Woll at the start of the year. Like, you thought when Stolarz was gonna run away with the job. Do you remember that?
Yeah, but then he got hurt, and then Woll did really well, right? So
Not right away.
I mean, who knows?
Yeah,
who knows? They're both good.
They're both good.
They're a good
team.
Which
is why I think they're going to share time. Stolarz has been In the time he's played, which is about half as many minutes at 5-on-5, he's been exceptional. 26 save points above expected. Woll's been 11 save points above expected, which is also exceptional. So, yeah, sorry. I should have probably been a little warmer to Woll than I was. So there you go.
Yeah. Good problem to have if you're a Leafs fan. Not a good problem if you're in a points league like a couple and you have one of these Leafs goalies, because you are not going to be getting too many starts. You'll start having, at least hopefully it'll be predictable. I like when there's a tandem like this. I like it when it's like so obvious they're just going to go one then the other, so that you can know going into the week, okay, I'm going to get the Tuesday and I'm going to get the Saturday. So then I can like stream my other goalies and know like, okay, so I have two goalies on the Saturday, so I know I can grab someone that plays on the Friday but not on the Saturday. You know, it's nice when you can predict it like that. Carolina is another team that's predictable. Washington. Okay, one more outjury that I'll get to here before we get into. I'm going to do cold streaks next. I think it's going to be fun to sort of go through some big names that are struggling. But first, a big name that's come back and also done well, Patrick Kane over on the Detroit Red Wings. I don't know how much there is to say about Kane. He's gone to the third line, I guess, playing with Rasmussen and Elmer Soderblom. They didn't want to bump Marco Kasper. So that's pretty good for Marco Kasper. Kane's still doing fine. He scored a goal in the last game, took five shots. I guess in the two games before that, he didn't do anything. Four shots total. So nice to see nine shots over three games and a goal. And then Patrick Kane's still on the top power play. So I don't know. He is what we think he is. I think he's good. Like, even on the third line, I don't think I'd be dropping Patrick Kane as long as he's at least still on the top power play. The top power play in the last game against Tampa was Kane, Larkin, DeBrincat, Raymond, Seider. The way Larkin, DeBrincat, Raymond are playing, you just want to be on that line. So I guess that's where you get hit a little bit if you've been holding on to Marco Kasper. But like I said, Kasper still playing on the top line with Raymond and Larkin, which is a good place to be. Though Kasper has slowed down a little bit, only one assist in his last four games. Brian, at one point you had Marco Kasper on your first place clinched, I guess you didn't clinch first place, but your playoff clinched Cupful team. Are you still riding Marco Kasper? It's still a pretty nice spot to be in the lineup, and good to see him hold it even with Patrick Kane back.
Yeah, no, I cut Marco Kasper loose. He only had two games. He wasn't going to play for me, and I had a choice, Kasper or Jiří Kulík, who's really slowed down.
You guys ended up dropping both.
Yeah, so I dropped Kasper. Kulík isn't long for my roster either at this point. So I'm going to just be okay with having moved on from Kasper. Like, I'm not sure I really have room for him. You know, I might just want to stream that spot. But he did have four shots and four hits against Tampa on Saturday. So even if the points haven't been coming, Kasper's still involved. Patrick Kane has a goal on nine shots since returning, which is like decent. I mean, we like Todd McClellan's version of the Red Wings, and hopefully Patrick Kane can thrive there. I'm not like certain he's going to be a slam dunk roster guy the whole rest of the way, but he's on the top power play where he scored that one goal. So we'll see what kind of relevant production Patrick Kane can continue. But I think he's still not someone that you can sit and forget. Like, you want to check every two or three games that he's doing what you need him to do to stay on your roster.
Yeah, that's fair. And of course, maybe after a two-week break, the Red Wings will decide to change up their lines and maybe put Patrick Kane back in the top six. Who knows what they're going to do? That's why, like, there's been some injuries, by the way, Brian. I decided I'm not even going to bring up injuries because maybe all of them will be healed by the time there's more NHL games. It's kind of the same. I haven't really been talking too much about line combos. I guess I kind of have. I mentioned Gunther's line and Patrick Kane's line, but I'm trying not to at least emphasize them as, like, something to really go into our decision-making, since that's a lot of time for the coach to sit and think and tinker, and who knows what they'll come up with after the break. Speaking of breaks, let's take one. Then we'll come back and hit up some cold streaks. You're listening to Keeping Carlson. This NHL season has been as predictable as a puck rolling on its edge. No one knows where it's going. But that just means there's time for your favorite team to figure things out and games left for you to get in on the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL. It's super easy for first-timers to get started. Try betting on something simple like picking a team to win. Go to the DraftKings Sportsbook app, select your team, and place your first bet. And if you're new to DraftKings, listen up. New customers bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets instantly. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code THPN. That's code THPN, stands for the Hockey Podcast Network, for new customers to get $150 in bonus bets instantly when you bet just $5. Only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age and eligibility varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. For additional terms and responsible gaming resources, see dkng.co/ice.
So Brian, this is the moment where I'm going to dole to you some players and you can take your cold bucket of water, but they're already cold. So you could either, I'm going to do another metaphor then. You could add salt to the wound on these guys and say, yeah, they do suck. Or you can do, what's the opposite of your cold bucket of water that you normally have? You love when I have players that are on cold streaks. Then you could say, actually, they deserve to be doing better. I think they're good. I feel like you're going to do that a lot in this segment. So what are you going to be doing to them?
I don't know, splashing like the Gatorade cooler in celebration on them.
Well, I mean, that's a bit premature.
I wouldn't throw a bucket of hot water on them.
Yeah, you don't want to do that. But maybe they could go sit in a nice tub. Like, you know.
Yeah, I draw a bath for them.
Temperate.
I'm going to draw them a bath.
Matthew's saying in the chat, a heated blanket. You'll give them a heated blanket to warm them up a little bit. So yeah, here's some names for you. I'll start on the Rangers. Maybe we were too quick last week. It'd been a couple games. He had JT Miller had a couple really nice games to start his tenure on the Rangers. And we're like, oh, look at this. Maybe he's even better than he was in Vancouver. Like, JT Miller, fantasy managers must be super stoked to have this guy and look at him doing so well. So then he played three games last week and he had no points. And he only had three shots. Like, it was a really bad week for JT Miller. Just 1 week, just three games, small sample size. But yeah, maybe we were a bit too quick to anoint him as, like, back to being 100-point JT Miller. I guess we'll have to wait and see. It is kind of weird because Miller's been playing with, well, he was playing a bit with Zibanejad. I see actually in the last game they switched it up and Zibanejad was playing with Kreider and Arthur Kaliev, which worked out well for Arthur Kaliev, by the way, who hadn't played in a bunch of games. He'd been scratched and he scored a goal. But I think that's mainly due to him playing with the red hot Mika Zibanejad, who is now up to 8 points in his last five games after his goal and assist versus Columbus. Is this going to be another? Like, there could only be one that's good? I think Zibanejad was doing well even when Miller had those couple good games. But yeah, what's going on with JT Miller? And are we ready to say that Mika is back and awesome again?
I'm going to start with that. I don't think Mika's back and awesome again, but it has been great for Zibanejad to see something. He's played 20 or more minutes in three of his last five games, has three multi-point outings in the last four. And Zibanejad was doing a lot of this while playing with JT Miller and Artemi Panarin. He went back to playing with Chris Kreider and I think it was Will Cooley last game. And so I don't think that's going to be as great.
Kaliev, like I mentioned.
Oh, Kaliev. Sorry. Yeah. I don't know that that's going to be as exciting a situation for Zibanejad, although, yes, it worked in the last game. So we'll see if it can continue working. As for JT Miller, so for Zibanejad, I'm not sold that he's back, but it's great to see a little ray of light here. JT Miller would be nice to see a ray of light for him, too. He had six shots, if you'll remember, in almost 19 minutes. In his first game as a Ranger, and we got really excited about those six shots. We're like, wait, is JT Miller going to shoot as a New York Ranger? The answer has been a resounding no since then. JT Miller has combined for 5 shots total in the 4 games he's played since that first 6-shot outing. And JT Miller's time on ice has exceeded that 1848 mark just once since then as well. You know, I could see like another spark coming after the break here for JT Miller. Like there's been a moment to rest and digest. It's been like, I mean, it has to have been like a very intense half season for him so far, even before the trade. And now that he's changed teams, let things settle a little and we'll see how JT Miller comes back. So I'm ready to keep a really open mind to still how high the ceiling can be for Miller with the Rangers. But it is disappointing that the shots didn't follow the way that we dreamt they would. We knew like we weren't going to assume they would, but it would have been nice.
I mean, Gunther's all of a sudden has a bunch of shots since coming back. So maybe Miller could learn from him. But yeah, Jonathan Tanner, definitely a little bit disappointing since his return. I wonder if the Rangers are turning into maybe like a Seattle. Like, I feel like every week we're talking about different players on the Rangers who are hot and cold. Like Zibanejad was cold. Kreider was like, you know, I feel like Trocheck. I feel like they're all over the place here. Maybe there's only like one line can be good at a time. They're a deep team. And we'll see if anyone can just like sustain like good production beyond like a Panarin for a while. By the way, in net, Shesterkin, this has been a roller coaster season for him. He was like so blah, not great. And then a couple episodes ago, maybe even last episode, we're like, okay, well, Shesterkin's back. He's incredible again. And now all of a sudden, he's been really bad in his last 5 games. It's like all bad. It's like all less than 900 save percentage, a couple even in the 700s. Not good. Not good, Igor. So he could definitely use this break. Maybe it's good for him that Russia is not invited to this tournament.
Yeah, he didn't want to go anyway.
Yeah, he had other fun plans. And hopefully for people who have Shesterkin on their fantasy teams, hopefully he's going to use that time to regroup and get back to what he was doing in January. February, Igor's is no bueno. Next cold streak, I want to go to the Vancouver Canucks. You know, JT Miller, we talked about him leaving and wondering if maybe this could be good for an Elias Pettersson. You know, now he's the main guy over in Vancouver. Yeah, like not great for him. Either Pettersson didn't have such a great week. He had an assist in the last game against Toronto, but before that was pointless in 3 games. Also barely any shots. I'm counting 3 shots in the last 4 games for Elias Pettersson. Also, when we were like, well, now he gets to be the guy, if you look at the last game against Toronto, Elias Pettersson didn't even get on the top power play. Filip Hedl was there with Besser and Garland and Dakota Joshua and Filip Hronek because Quinn Hughes was out, and then Pettersson was on one with DeBrusque and Suter and Hoglander. I don't even know like which is the top power play. I'd say probably Besser and Hedl are the next best two on the team and Garland. So I think, and that one got more time. So I don't know. Pettersson and JT Miller both need to figure things out for themselves and start shooting the puck and helping their fantasy managers. Because yeah, not a great week for Pettersson. I would definitely be concerned if I had him because it's been a rough season. And I would have maybe hoped that now with some stability and his ops out of the picture, he'd do a lot better than he's done in this past few games.
Yeah, pretty uninspiring run from Pettersson. I'm with you. 3 shots for Pettersson total in his last 4 games. He's picked up that assist, but nothing else. And he does look like he's on the second power play unit. Without Quinn Hughes in the lineup, it can be hard to tell, but I'm pretty sure the unit being quarterbacked by Tyler Myers most likely to be the second unit.
Yeah, although, that's a good way to look at it.
Yeah.
On the flip side, Filip Hronek is good. And like, I'm telling you, not only based on the numbers, which have been good, he has 3 points in 4 games now as a Canuck. In 3 of those 4 games, he had 3 shots also in each. So we're looking at 10 shots now in 4 games, which is not too bad for Hedl, who's never been like a huge shooter. So yeah, Hedl shooting 3 points in 4 games. And man, you go on the Twitter and see, which I know most people don't want to do, but you know, I'm there retweeting for game day tweets with Shams. We do it so you don't have to. Still going strong, by the way. Check it out, gametotweets.com. I'm adding more features all the time. But anyway, people love Filip Hedl on there. The people who are still there love Filip Hedl. There was like all these beat writers from the Canucks being like, he's like the most noticeable player on the ice. And like fans being like, I love this guy. I want to get him tattooed on my head. Like people love Filip Hedl in the first 4 games of Vancouver. So I added him actually to my couple team. I got him for the one game that he didn't get a point, and then when he did then get a point in the last game, I had him on my bench. So I'm hoping for better things. Again, part of the reason why I had such a terrible week last week, maybe my decision-making wasn't the best, but I was kind of thinking, look, I didn't trade just Barkov for Kaprizov. I basically traded Barkov for Kaprizov and Filip Hedl, because I picked up Filip Hedl as soon as the trade processed to fill that IR spot, or to fill that spot after I put Kaprizov in IR. And I'm excited. Like, I'm curious to see what Hedl's going to do. Seems, and the fact that he got on the top power play, a good sign. Seems like the coach likes him. Seems like everyone likes him. So I would recommend for others listening to maybe give him a shot. Also, by the way, the Canucks start that next matchup. They play the Sunday, which is light, and then the Wednesday, which is light. And there's a lot of players, if you're playing like Saturday and then Tuesday, Thursday, you have to check. I have Pavel Zacha on my roster, and I can have him on my bench for those first three games of the matchup. So it's like deciding, like, should I drop Zacha or Hedl? Maybe I would normally, you know, prefer to keep Zacha, but with that schedule, that may be another reason to look at Philly Heat.
Philly Heat. Yeah, that's a throwback. That's a Keeping Carlson lore throwback. Elon, I'm with you. Like, I appreciate your enthusiasm, which is contagious, that you've caught from the people who are remaining that you're retweeting on GameDayTweets.com. I'm very open to, like, a new Filip Hedl. I think I was really open to it on the last show, actually, and it was the response was kind of tepid. It seems like it's catching on a little bit. So we'll see what happens coming out of the break for Filip Hedl, who is, yeah, top power play and top line. He's playing with Besser and O'Connor. Like, until Elias Pettersson is playing and producing like a top line center, I'm not going to automatically assume that he's on the top line. How about that? So Hedl, O'Connor, Besser, I'm calling you line one in Vancouver. Ooh. Yeah. And so absolutely, I would go get Hedl, see what he can do for you this week in those two lighter day games. And from there, you'll know, you'll have a little more data on what you can expect from Hedl going forward.
Yeah, definitely, Trev, when you're writing the write-up, I'm not saying like guaranteed Hedl's going to be an MVP, but a good guy to give a shot to for a new situation. Seems like he's doing well to start. Hronek doing well. He had a goal and an assist against Toronto. So yeah, when Quinn Hughes is out, that's especially good for Hronek, but he's been pretty solid since coming back from his injury. And I'll just mention Thatcher Demko, who had a great week, but he got hurt in the last game. Lankinen came in. He did really well. They're saying it's minor for Demko, but last year, I feel like the injury started as minor, then he missed the end of the season and the start of this season. So who knows? So maybe if you wanted to just, if you had an extra roster spot, you need a goalie, maybe you grab a Lankinen, and then if it turns out Demko's fine, then good for everybody, and then you could, you know, move on. But we'll see. But definitely always noticeable when Thatcher Demko gets hurt because of his history. Next, Cold Streak Brian, let's go to Steven Stamkos on Nashville. He's doing it again, and I feel like I talked about Stamkos being cold on the last show, but that was in the context of all of Nashville being cold. So I was like, and then, you know, I was like, do you think it's the, and then you were like, oh, it'll be, you know, up and down, whatever. But like the rest of the team is doing well. Like they just had a 6-4 win over Buffalo. We're like, Marchessault had a big game. Ryan O'Reilly had, I think, 4 assists. This is off the top of my head. Philip Forsberg, I think, had a couple goals. Brady Shea scored a couple goals somehow. Yosi did his thing. But yeah, just Steven Stamkos, pointless. That brings Stamkos now to 7 games in a row without a point. And just like all these other cold streaks, no shots. Like, the shots are barely there. He was shotless, only had 2 hits for his fantasy managers in that big win over Buffalo. So just a huge disappointment. I've seen a lot of trades for Steven Stamkos in the Cupful Trades channel on our Discord. So I guess some people are thinking they're buying low. Other people think they're selling while the name value is still there. How nervous would you be having Stamkos and seeing this struggle? I guess another person that could really use this break coming up.
I am pretty nervous about Steven Stamkos. I thought Nashville was turning a corner, and they're telling me otherwise. Like last week, was it last week? Or I can't remember if it was on the show or on our like Discord server where I was talking about Nashville and how their 10-game rolling averages had like finally like headed into the clear. And that was about 4 or 5 games ago. And I'm looking at the chart again on Natural Stat Trick of their rolling average 5-on-5 for shot attempt share, which is a good measure of, you know, if a team is controlling play. and it is nosediving right now, along with their expected goals, which isn't great. It looked like they were slowly chipping away at figuring things out. And Steven Stamkos, one symbol of that struggle. Stamkos, you know, this Stamkos has had 3 shots a game for the last 3 seasons on average. Stamkos has 9 shots total in his last 6 games. So he's getting half as many shots on net. And I felt badly a week or two ago. I'm like, man, I should have bought in on Stamkos. Like, that's something I could have done for a low price, could have gotten in. And now I'm like, well, you know, maybe I don't need this really kind of shaky, nonlinear path that Nashville seems to be on. If I had to guess, Elon, I think Stamkos is going to be better the rest of the season than he has been in the last week. So I'm still a believer, but it's looking like it might be a rockier ride. Like, I thought once Nashville sort of stabilized and figured things out, it would be like clear skies from there. And seeing now that it's not, puts a bit of a damper on expecting Steven Stamkos to be a consistently good fantasy performer from here on out.
Yeah, well, especially with Nashville, like, the other players getting points and Stamkos not. That makes it especially weird. Like now we see, like, at least before it was like, okay, you know, if Nashville's bad, obviously Stamkos is going to be bad. But now that there's even the possibility that Nashville can go and score some goals and still Stamkos isn't getting in on them, that makes me even more concerned. But who knows? That sounds like what you're saying is he's maybe another Nick Schmaltz, go up and down. So maybe the next time Stamkos has an up, that might be a good time to try to trade him before the next down. But okay, let's go to a couple more cold streaks here. I got a few for you. But over in Edmonton, I don't think we've done a heat check on our non-McDavid and Draisaitl guys in a while. And speaking of our other top power play performers in Zach Hyman and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, both like just really meh lately, like not absolutely terrible. But you look at Zach Hyman, I'm seeing 2 goals and 1 assist in his last 7 games. RNH, even worse, actually. He did have 2 assists in the most recent game against Colorado, but before that, only 1 assist in 4 games. I don't know. It's like, not like drop, you know, it's not like what Stamkos is doing, right? Like, they're getting their points once in a while, but these are guys that, you know, like, especially Zach Hyman last year was so incredible and was just scoring all the time. And, like, you know, the lines with Edmonton have been shaken up a little bit. In the last game, McDavid was playing with Arvidsson and Hyman. If you recall, for a long time, it was Draisaitl with Arvidsson and Podkolzin, and then McDavid was with, I guess, Hyman and like a RNH or, I don't know, Corey Perry, I think someone talked about at one point.
Last year it was Nugent Hopkins. Recently it was Corey Perry.
Yeah, but anyway, like, it's, I don't know. So they're shaking things up. I'm just curious to know, like, is this the kind of thing where, like, look, these are guys on the Edmonton top power play. They'll be fine for the most part. Or do you think that this is really just because McDavid and Draisaitl will just continue to scorch? And yeah, it just seems like everyone else, I mean, okay, Evan Bouchard is doing really well also, but like everyone else just seems to be getting left behind a little bit right now.
Yeah, Victor Arvidsson, by the way, on the top line playing with McDavid lately, doing nothing really of any consequence in any sort of consistent way. It's something I still thought maybe this is the chance. It doesn't seem like it will be. Let's focus though on Zach.
I mean, to be fair, like, he had 2 points in his last 4 games. He's taking a few shots. Like, he's not, I mean, what do you, depends what you expect.
2 points in his last 4 games.
Yeah, better than what he was doing for most of the season.
Sure. Oh, yeah, absolutely. But for it's still not really doing, like, I'd like to add him, and I'd like him to play well enough to be like, oh, it's hard to drop you. Should I drop someone else first? That's not a performance that really does that. Zach Hyman, 52-point pace, and having, not a great season. I mean, spoken that way, too. But also, his shots on goal are down. His shot attempt rates are also down. He also is really struggling to get in on goals scored while he's on the ice. Just 47% participation. That's like at least 15% lower than it ought to be. And it shows up in his secondary assists. He has like none at 5-on. Well, he has a little more than none, but barely at 5-on-5. I want to be like Zach Hyman's going to be fine, but I'm not really sure here. You know, I think 60 points at least still feels right and fair. For Zach Hyman, which is an improvement over what we've seen so far, but I'm not sure how much higher I'd go. And Elon, you know, I was thinking, remember I mentioned at the top of the show, right, Gunther, and we were going to compare him to some guys. One of them, I just missed it, was Stamkos for next year. And another, like, if Hyman keeps playing this way, I wonder if Gunther can leapfrog him in drafts next season. It feels like this year, and tell me if I'm wrong, I don't know if we're usually this disappointed with so many picks in the early rounds. Like, I'd have to go back a couple seasons and see, but Hyman, Stamkos, Marchessault, Pettersson, Zibanejad, Carter Verhaeghe, who we haven't gotten to yet, but he's on
Brady
my
Kachuk.
List too.
Brady Kachuk had that cold streak for a while.
Yeah, but like Brady Kachuk isn't someone that like I've really doubted, even while he's been cold. These guys
JT Miller was picked high
to some extent, but also I don't know that I doubted him.
Okay, I just want to have one. Give me a win.
I mean,
Timo Meier.
Yeah. Well. Okay. There you go. So. I'm wondering, Gunther versus Hyman, I think, is a legit question at this moment, because I don't know that Hyman should be doing a whole lot better. And I'm also going to extend to talk about Ryan Nugent Hopkins, too, who doesn't get drafted as high as Hyman, but is on the same point pace, 53 point pace so far for Nugent Hopkins. And it's a kind of a similar story to Hyman in terms of his struggle. He's shooting less. He's participating less. So the first is his fault, kind of. The second piece of participation is more bad luck and variance. But one difference between Nugent Hopkins and Hyman that makes me more concerned about Nugent Hopkins bouncing back is on-ice threat is way down as well. And I guess that's what happens when you spend most of your time, not most of your time, but a good deal of time, more than usual, with guys like Connor Brown, Victor Arvidsson, Matthias Janmark as your line mates. One thing we've noticed for Nugent Hopkins is he needs to have one thing going really, really well for him to put up great numbers. And last year, that was playing with Hyman and McDavid basically all season. The year before, that was putting up 53 power play points. This year, he doesn't. Nugent Hopkins does not have one thing going really, really well for him. I have him in a shallow league. I picked him out of free agency. He produced a little for me since, but I'm considering saying goodbye. I wouldn't in like a cupful deep league that's like 250 players, but in shallower leagues, he's not a necessary guy that you might have to hold on to the rest of the way.
Yeah, and the thing is, the Oilers always change up the lines, so like maybe you'll get a moment where RNH is playing with McDavid and like, oh, I really want him, but then like in the last game, Nugent Hopkins was playing with Connor Brown and Matthias Janmark, so that's not exciting, even though he does have top power plays. Maybe not enough. Hyman in a good roster spot. My main policy with drafts is like I don't want to reach for a player who's just had a career year and they're above the age of 30. And sometimes, you know, that could bite you. Like Joe Pavelski, I feel like, did that and then continued to be great back in the day. Sam Reinhardt, I guess, was under 30 last year. I don't know. He was like on the cusp. I don't know exactly how old Sam Reinhardt is, but I think he's around 30. And he's kept it up this year. So there's exceptions, but that's just kind of how I go. I wasn't expecting Hyman to be as good, but I didn't expect him to be this bad. So I do expect Hyman to be better, like you said, but he still is like, he's Zach Hyman. He's not like a superstar. Like he hasn't been a superstar for the majority of his career. And last year was incredible. But yeah, it seems like maybe that was just a special year for Zach Hyman that he can always remember as like the best. And then after that, he'll settle into being pretty great, but not like that incredible. Let's do a couple guys actually remind me a lot of Hyman and RNH. Like just guys that are doing like fine-ish, but like not comparative way what we expected. Over on St. Louis, like Jordan Kyrou and Pavel Buchnevich. Buchnevich maybe is even like below and like maybe he's even potentially drop worthy. I'll be curious what you think about him. But Buchnevich does have like 3 assists in his last 4 games. So that's something, but like hardly any shots. So it's like one of these guys that if you have him a cupful, when you look at the actual fantasy points per game, it's like pretty low. Like I like to think borderline is around 4 fantasy points per game, and we give 3 points for an assist. And he's like below that even when he does get an assist, just because he's barely taking any shots. And then Jordan Kyrou, who we expect a lot from, pretty cold himself. He did have 2 games in a row with goals at the start of last week, or on, I guess, Sunday and Tuesday. But before that, he had 3 pointless games, and since he's had 2 pointless games, so yeah, it just seems like St. Louis is just not a fun place. Like now Rob Thomas is kind of hot, so that's fun. He's got 5 points in his last 4 games. Before that, Thomas went on his own cold streak. So yeah, it is starting to kind of feel like just you don't want anyone on St. Louis. Like all the defensemen, like I know Colton Parayko has been great to you. Even he's like slowed down a little bit. But it just seems like there's no one that's like, mwah, you know, like you definitely want this guy for sure.
Yeah, I would say like Robert Thomas qualifies there as the guy that I want for sure. And I know like he hasn't done a whole lot lately, but clearly.
Has been good lately, I was saying, but like before that he was cold. Has 5 points in the last 4.
Yeah. So St. Louis doesn't score a whole lot of goals. And there have been moments where it's like, yeah, I want the guy in St. Like, remember Dylan Holloway? He felt like a go get him. and might be a full season roster. He's still like doing okay. He has 3 points in his last seven and is still shooting reasonably well and getting good deployment. But I think this is the story. And like, even when you're, as you're talking about Buchnevich and Kyrou not doing a whole lot lately, I'm like, yeah. And, you know, they're both basically still on the same pace they've been on for most of the season. Buchnevich just over 50 points, Kyrou mid-60s, which is where Kyrou was last season. Buchnevich has had a little fall there in his numbers, and I don't see a reason to think that it's going to get a whole lot better. Kyrou's doing about what we would have expected, not taking a step forward, which would have been nice, but I'm not sure we were really realistically hoping for that. So I think on St. Louis, you want Robert Thomas. And I think you want, like, Jordan Kyrou's still good, like, nice to have. But the rest, you know, guys that aren't going to always feel good to roster. And sometimes it's going to be, depending on the depth of your league, it'll be worth the pain of rostering them when it's not working out. And other times it won't. One guy, by the way, just to, in case you hadn't noticed, Cam Fowler, if you're rostering him from his little early scoring spurt when he arrived in St. Louis, he scored against Chicago on Saturday, and that was his first point in 8 games. Not taking a whole lot of shots or doing anything of consequence. So snoozer Cam Fowler if you happen to still be holding on to him.
Yeah, and St. Louis does play a lot of games. They have 6 games in this upcoming matchup, but if they don't get any points, yeah, it makes it tricky to decide what to do. Brian, you know, I started this segment here and I was like, you're going to get out your, we landed on heated blanket, the suggestion from Matthew. I don't think you've given it to anyone yet. JT Miller, Pedersen, Stamkos,
you're right.
Hyman, RNH, Kyrou. You're just like, okay. Yeah, they all stink.
Well, Miller.
So maybe next.
I think Miller, I gave a vote of confidence to, and Stamkos, I think, can do better. Marchessault, I didn't talk about, but
he's good.
I might have thrown some cold water.
Oh.
He has 0 or 1 shots total in 4 of his last 6 games.
Don't like that.
But again, it seems like Nashville problems again. Anyway, yeah. So I guess let's keep going and see if we can find someone.
Yeah, I want to find someone where you're just like, don't even worry about it. Like, this is the perfect buy low time. You need to get this guy. He's going to bounce back any second. So let's try out Bo Horvat over on the Islanders, who, yeah, you know, last year he was on a good run with Barzal, and Barzal got hurt, and then Horvat really slowed down. And now this year, maybe it's happening again. Horvat only 1 point in his last 4 games now. Also, those low shots that we don't love to see. Overall in the season, we're down to now 40 points in 54 games for Horvat, which is only a 61-point pace, which is far below what he's done the last couple of years. Are you going to give the blanket to Horvat? Is he about to go off? I feel like probably not, right?
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to give Horvat the blanket either. Okay. Although, like, I think he's the closest. It's unfortunate that Horvat lost Matt Barzal, who has a very high impact on Horvat's expected goals, for sure, according to the numbers posted at HockeyViz. But one thing I think Horvat's also missing is Noah Dobson. Noah Dobson's been out since January 20th. I don't see any sign of his imminent return. He's on long-term injured reserve, so I don't know that he's going to be back any sooner than Barzal, and Barzal is going to be out through to the like nearly end of the season was the last update we got. And that doesn't bode well for poor Bo Horvat. I think he's good, but he's playing with Anthony Duclair and Anders Lee at 5-on-5, and Duclair, middle six forward, not awful, but not great. And Anders Lee, you know what? Anders Lee, just 5 points in his last 11 games, but he's taken 17 shots over his last 4. So the shots are still flying. And that was actually really nice to see because Lee had really quieted down in terms of shots. I'm not sure. I'm curious to see if Anders Lee can stay rosterable through the rest of the season. But Horvat playing with Lee and Duclair at 5-on-5, not awesome. The top power play, also not a whole lot better, and they're still splitting time with the units. And then you look on the back end. I mentioned Dobson's not there. No one's there. Adam Palik, Scott Perunovic seeing the most time on the back end. The second pair is essentially Tony D'Angelo and Alexander Romanov. And then you've got Boqvist and Chalowski. So, like, there's a bunch of guys who should, in theory, be good puck movers, but I'm not sure how many of them actually are. And I think that's going to impact Horvat's offense the rest of the way. So all of that to say, I really still like Bo Horvat, but I don't know that I like the situation in Long Island very much to support him returning to full form. But I still think he'll be decent the rest of the way.
Okay. Well, now they've like flipped in this line of Nelson, Palmieri, and Siplikov is going off a little bit again. So I guess maybe it's the kind of thing where now Horvat falls to like their level. And now we can just sort of hope that, yeah, like someone's going to score some goals. And lately, yeah, it has been the Nelson line. We'll see moving forward which line is going to do better. I feel like right now I'd rather have Nelson than Horvat, but obviously that's just recency bias. I will say, Brian, you mentioned Alex Romanov. I love Alex Romanov. He's like the perfect, like if you got him out of free agency after that Dobson injury, just like he's getting 4 or 5 blocks like literally every game. Like for the last 7 games, it's been either 4 or 5 blocks. You throw in like some shots. Every once in a while, he picks up an assist. Like for a league like a couple where we give 0.5 for a block, that's just like a floor of 2.5 points. That's just the start. And then you hope he gets another something or other to bring you over. That's a solid piece. So yeah, definitely I would take a look at Alex Romanov. And if you're in a categories league that counts blocks, gotta imagine he's long gone. Actually, gotta imagine he was rostered all season. But yeah, he's coming through for points league, especially if you're like shallow on, or you know, your team is shallow on D. Like you don't have like 4 good D, and coming up to this next matchup where, like I said, like the Saturday and then the Tuesday and then the Thursday, they're all busy days. So there's no point having an extra, like, you know, if I had like Pavel Zacha on my bench, but I can get Alex Romanov to play for, you know, all of his games. Give me the guy who's going to get on my roster that's going to give you that nice floor. So I like him. I like him for what he is.
Yeah, you can like him for what he is. That's all right.
Okay, let's go to Minnesota now. First thing I want to say about Minnesota, Brian, here's a tweet from Jesse Pierce, Minnesota beat writer from 3 days ago. Spotted Kaprizov up and well in the hallway. He said he's doing quote-unquote okay with a genuine Kirill smile, but also an ugh, this sucks, I can't play eye roll. Come on, that tweet, like, doesn't that indicate he's already up and around? He's like, oh, it sucks, I can't play, but, like, I'm okay. Like, he's coming back soon.
Where was this?
This was in the hallway.
Of where?
I don't know, the game. It was 3 days ago. Oh, I guess okay. Jesse Pierce was at the Wild game.
Okay.
He's not at home, like, learning how to walk
it's
again.
But it's not a hospital hallway. You've got that going for you.
Yeah, he'll be back soon. But anyways, while he's gone, it hasn't gone well for Joel Eriksson-Ek, right? I guess he's really missing his friend Kirill. Eriksson-Ek is, like, shooting a lot, so we like to see that. But yeah, the production really hasn't been there. We're looking at no points in 4 games now for Joel Eriksson-Ek. Is this just like a blip? Like, again, I look at the shots column, and to me, it's like, all right, don't worry about it. And he missed the last game, by the way, but I'm sure he'll be back after the break. I'm going to lean to, like, this is the blanket guy, right, Brian? Like, Eriksson-Ek, he's fine, right? He's still shooting.
Yeah, I think he's fine. There have been moments through the season where Eriksson-Ek hasn't been fine. You know, it just hasn't seemed like he's done all that we want him to do. But he's not someone we like get overly concerned about either at this point. Like Eriksson-Ek has to be worse for longer. I mean, maybe I'm understating it though. Like he's just a 44 point pace this season, Joel Eriksson-Ek. But his shooting percentage is down. His shots are like reasonably fine. His hits are the same as usual. The Minnesota power play hasn't found a whole lot of success, and you can come up with a few reasons for that. Kaprizov's absences, no one really capable of quarterbacking there. I'm just going to kind of cross my fingers, though, and hope for a better second half from Eriksson-Ek, who, hasn't looked like his full self, but I'm going to chalk it up to just a bunch of factors that aren't him having gotten worse.
Mm-hmm. On the flip side, a guy who's also pointless in a while on Minnesota, but isn't like maybe showing some other good things like shots is Matt Zuccarello. Oh man, pointless in 5 games with not too many shots. So he's definitely hurting his fantasy managers. I think for Zuccarello, my take would be like, I'm not expecting much until Kaprizov comes back at this point. Are you seeing any reason to hold him aside from just hoping that he'll get hot again when Kirill's back?
I think that's the main reason to hold him, also in some formats, including the Cupful, which is, by the way, the Keeping Carlson Ultimate Patron Fantasy League, kkupfl.com. Minnesota has a decent playoff schedule, so that's one reason to hold on to Zuccarello. I'll also mention Ilan Drinkaprizov's first absence. Zuccarello, 14 points in 12 games, 4 goals, 10 assists, 5 on the power play, 26 shots. And it didn't look like so unreasonable. And Zuccarello's playing with Boldy and Rossi, which is, you know, that's line one, power play one. So I'm actually going to say that Zuccarello might help you before Kaprizov comes back, which he might not even have a chance if Kaprizov is back, you know, for the first that's game true. After the Four Nations Cup.
You know what? That's good. It's almost like you're making me feel like this game we play is like a little bit random. And maybe what we're doing on this podcast might be like not so valuable.
There's your heated blanket for Matt Zuccarello and Eriksson Ek. They both got it. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. So how do you explain how Zuccarello was like great the last time that Kaprizov was out, but has now been bad? Yeah, maybe it's just a cold streak. I guess
maybe it's just a cold streak. It's been 5 games. Zuccarello's 14 points came in 12 games with Kaprizov out before. So 14 points in Zuccarello's next 7 games guaranteed.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a lot of Minnesota has been cold lately, to be fair. Pretty much just Matt Boldy and Jared Spurgeon have been good. By the way, Brian, what do you think about Spurgeon lately? You're always very low on our friend Jared, but he's come back from his injury and has done pretty well. 2 assists in the last game. I assume this is where the cold water comes out quickly. I'll tell you, I dropped, tell me if this was dumb, my last move of last week, I dropped Justin Falk, who plays 6 games in the next matchup, for Jared Spurgeon, who plays 5 games. I gave up a game to get Spurgeon over Falk.
Hmm. Yeah. What's no regrets, right?
Well, I'm asking. Well, that's why I'm asking you. Should I? Was that dumb? Was it smart? I'm just curious to get your take on Spurgeon. He's got.
I'll take Spurgeon over Falk. Yeah, okay. I think both you're eventually gonna like want to let go of anyway. So might as well get whoever the getting's good from.
Yeah, makes sense. I do have Durzi, but you said that Durzi's probably not gonna do much either. That, yeah. The search for that fourth D is a lifelong search, right?
And actually, do you have Romanov, or do you just wish you did?
I have Romanov, so he's my third D now. He's locked in for I don't know, in my mind he's locked in until he like does badly for a while. Then I only have 2 D again, and then I have to really. I had Sanheim. I thought Sanheim was my locked in third D, but I let him go. Who knows? Okay. One more cold streak. Okay, and then we'll go to the Hots to end this thing over Montreal. Too bad. Dobesh. What happened? Jacob Dobesh. He was our guy. He was doing so well. He stunk lately. Maybe Dobesh time is over. You know, Caden Primo was killing it in the AHL. Someone was saying in the Discord he won like AHL Player of the Month or something. Who knows? Maybe after the break, Primo comes back and Dobesh goes back down.
I don't know. Like, I'm just going to say if Caden Primo is having success there, why mess with that?
You know, maybe try to like win games, I'd imagine. Like maybe Montreal wants to like.
I guess
better.
That's important. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, and I assume they want Dobesh playing. Like, I think they'd rather develop Dobesh than Primo. Primo, I guess I'm just trying to find a reason to keep Primo out of the NHL. He was awful when he was there last. And, you know, you were sort of talking about Dobesh taking over the job from Montembeau. I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think they're going to split either. And I for Dobesh playing, like, maybe if he splits games, it's worth keeping him in the NHL. But for anything less, doesn't feel like it would be. So, yeah, it might be the end of Dobesh time for the moment. Or maybe he'll have a good game when he comes back and Montembeau will have a bad one and we'll be back to where we started.
Yeah, goalies are so impossible to predict. But yeah, it's definitely been a bummer for people. I know Shams like added Dobesh, was excited about him because he knew he would get 2 games because Montreal had the 2 back-to-backs this week. And obviously didn't work out with Dobesh hitting him with a negative before getting pulled on the Sunday game. Another guy super cold on Montreal. They talked about it on the last short shifts. Patrick Laine, pointless in 8 games now, getting benched for stretches, not taking any shots. Are we snoozer? Like if you had Laine, do you drop him at this point? Like this is just a complete disaster. And he was so good. And now he's just so terrible. They were positing on short shifts that maybe like Laine just like plays himself out of places. Kind of like the, what's his name? That just went to Philly from Calgary. Why am I blanking? Kuzmenko.
Yeah.
Like, you know what? Like they like him at first and then quickly falls out of favor. Has it happened now? Another guy that definitely could use a break. Is Laine playing for Finland in this tournament? I mean, maybe it could be good. Either way, it's like you can spin it however you want. Like if he has a break, that's good. He could use a break to refresh. Or if he's playing the tournament, use that to gain, I don't know, improve his confidence. I don't know, but it's been really a bad run for Patrick Laine. I tell you, Brian, and I've been more patient than usual this season with some guys, I would have a really hard time not dropping Patrick Laine.
Me too. I have him in that shallow league where I have Nugent Hopkins, and I think he's going to be a drop before Nugent Hopkins. I mean, the thing with Laine is he has like that ability to like be a game breaker and like fully explode. However, it's hard to believe that we're close to it, and it's hard to wait for it. Laine has a total of just 6 shots in 7 games. In his last 7 games, Laine's seen fewer than 13 minutes in 4 of his last 5 games. His ice time has gone as low as 10.5 minutes. You know, hide the name, hide Patrick Laine. You're looking at a fourth liner with shot totals and minutes like that, which makes sense because his line mates also scream fourth liner in Joel Armia and Owen Beck. So I'm with you, Elon. I think it might be snoozer time for Laine. I might want to give him like 2 games when he comes back, 2 or 3 games, see if there's promise, especially in a league that's deeper than my shallower league. But otherwise, I think it's time to go. Also, Laine is on the Four Nations roster along with Joel Armia. I wonder if they'll play together. Mm. Also, I didn't know, I didn't realize till now that Erik Hauula is Finnish. I mean, like, it makes sense now that I know it. I just feel like he's had a long career playing a role that, I mean, stereotypically, I'm going to like expose my own biases here. I don't see a whole lot of Finns playing the same role that Erik Hauula has through his career. So, hey, way to go, Erik Hauula.
Yeah, hopefully he can stay healthy. He's had a rough year in that regard. Are we worried about, like, do you think that this Nations tournament is going to have, like, a bunch of injuries? Like, if it's, like, a hard-fought tournament, like, isn't it likely?
Okay, I'm glad you asked, Elon, because I don't know. I truly don't.
How hard are these players going to play? Are they going to be playing like they care so much?
The way the tournament is being sold to me, like on The Athletic and like through NHL media and wherever else, like it's just sort of finding me, is that like, yeah, this is like a tournament for the honor of the countries and the players. And it's a big deal who's selected and who's captain. And these players are all competitive and they're going to be rivals with their teammates and teammates with their rivals. It's going to get really serious. It's going to be like the Olympics. And in my mind, I'm just like, isn't this just a series of all-star games where players are sorted by nationality? Like, that's what I'm expecting or what I was expecting. But I mean, part of the marketing obviously wants it to feel high stakes, so I'm paying more attention. I just can't tell if that's a bluff or not yet. What do you think?
Yeah, I guess we'll find out in game one if like someone like breaks his ankle, then we'll know, oh man, this is for real. It's like a Squid Game a little bit, like thinking it's just fun and games until you get, no spoilers.
Yeah.
It wasn't just fun and games on that.
I don't know. I don't know if I'd be interested to hear what players' honest takes are going into that. Like, my guess is no one wants to get injured, but they still want to win. And I'm like, I assume the level of competition won't be as high. And so maybe like the last couple games when there are actual stakes to it. That's my hunch.
I was seeing some tweets about Barkov and how like, you know, he's like really, you know, I guess Finland's like the underdog in this tournament. And it was kind of like, oh, Barkov's going to like prove that like they should, you know, be the underdog and help them win. And like, I feel like they're going to have to lean on Barkov, like, you know, to help take them past, you know, coming in fourth place or third place. But if I'm like the Florida Panthers, like Barkov gets injured every year, like I would want him to take it easy and not like push extra hard during this break. So it's going to be interesting to see how this all shakes out. I hopefully didn't just put a jinx on Barkov. Like Crosby just missed a couple games with injury for Pittsburgh, and now he's like apparently going to play in the tournament.
Except like it doesn't matter if he gets hurt. Like Pittsburgh's going nowhere.
Well, it matters to some fantasy managers, that's for sure.
Sure, but I think like teams out of the playoff picture, their players are going to be ready to compete. Maybe that's it. If you're an NHLer playing in the Four Nations Cup, let us know. Keeping Carl, like, just tweet at us or become a patron. We'd love to know what you're thinking.
Well, I feel like they're not listening. They're busy. Mm-hmm. I guess it's a podcast. You can listen whatever as you're cooking breakfast. Do they cook their own breakfast? Okay, let's take a break. We'll come back and end the show. But let me know if you are messaging us, NHL player, then also let us know if you cook breakfast or if someone cooks for you when you're on a tournament like this. So So, Brian, I wanted to end the show with some hot streaks. We'll end on a happy note, and then we'll figure out what we're going to do next week because we're not going to have any NHL action to break down. We have some ideas. But, yeah, let's start in Florida. Matthew Tkachuk is absolutely insane. It's like, I feel like this happened last year, maybe the year before. Like, you know, he disappointed people who drafted him. We're like, oh, man, what a blown high pick on a guy who's just fine. Lately, Matthew Tkachuk just continues to scorch 13 points now in his last six games. Two straight three-point games to end this stretch of the season before the break. Eight shots and seven shots in those last two games against Ottawa and St. Louis. So Matthew Tkachuk winning weeks for his fantasy managers. He's absolutely insane. And he's also helping out his line mate, Sam Bennett, who is on an amazing hot streak. Also 4 points in his last three games, also taking a decent number of shots. Probably a lot of it just has to do with playing with Matthew Tkachuk, but if you have Sam Bennett, you don't care how. You just ask how many. What's that saying? Doesn't matter. All I know is that you're happy to have Sam Bennett right now and you want anyone playing with Matthew Tkachuk. Though actually, Evan Rodriguez has been playing with Matthew Tkachuk and not like doing that much. But Kachuk's incredible and Bennett is definitely going along for the ride and having a good time lately.
Yeah, you know, they never ask, what's the saying? They ask, how's he saying it?
That's how'd I do? Yeah. Not great.
No, terribly. Sam Bennett, I have him on my couple roster, and I love having him on my couple roster. And this is including like the 20 game goal drought or whatever that he went through. His floor is just so reliably steady. Like, you love Alex Romanov for like what he does peripherally as a defenseman. Sam Bennett never stopped shooting. He never stopped hitting. The points weren't coming, but he still was never or rarely the worst player on my roster on a given night, even with no points for a really long time. So it's gravy when Sam Bennett's producing, which he is now, which we knew or had a good hunch was going to happen. And it's great that he's playing with Matthew Tkachuk. You would think Evan Rodriguez is getting in on some of this or enough to be noticeable because he's the third one on their line in the last game. No, he's not. So poor E-Rod couldn't stretch out another season of fantasy relevance. It was fun while it lasted for him, but for Sam Bennett, the party's still going. And the party's getting restarted for a friend. Well, I don't know if they're friends, but they play on the same team. Sam Bennett and Carter Verhaeghe. Carter Verhaeghe had a hat trick against the Islanders last Sunday. It's two Sundays ago for those listening around the time we recorded this on Monday, February 10th. But that's helped Verhaeghe get up to 5 goals, 6 assists for 11 points in his last 10 games. And importantly, 37 shots in those 10 games for Verhaeghe, including in 5 of Verhaeghe's last 7 games, he's taken 4 or more shots, including a 9-shot game and a 7-shot game, which is huge news. For context, Verhaeghe went a month, 14 games from mid-December to mid-January without shooting 4 times in a game, even once. And often it was 2 or 3 shots less than 4 shots in a game. Verhaeghe had just stopped shooting. Now he's up to a 62-point pace. And what's been a rough season for Verhaeghe, the hat trick tilts the scales a bit here in saying like now Verhaeghe's hot, but it is nice to see some sunshine here. Really, for the first time, we're seeing this for Verhaeghe since November. But even then, when Verhaeghe, he had a run of goals, he wasn't shooting then either. He was just scoring way more than he should have. There are some leagues where maybe he's been dropped. If you are in one of those leagues, I would take another fresh look at Carter Verhaeghe and see if he fits into your lineup. I'm not sold that this is going to last, but it's nice to finally see Verhaeghe deliver on something along the lines of what we expected. And I wonder if he's another guy who might get supplanted by Dylan Gunther in drafts next season. Like, for me, it's a pretty easy choice between the two. Elon, do you agree?
Well, you didn't even say what your choice is. You just said it's an easy choice.
Carter Verhaeghe or Dylan Gunther?
Yeah, what's the choice? What's your
who do you draft first?
Like, I don't think it's such an easy choice. Like, okay, so,
clearly.
I don't know.
I thought it was such an easy choice that it was all implied, but I guess
so.
Not.
Who is your answer?
Dylan Gunther.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I think. Well, I guess I'd lean to the guy who's younger and like on the up versus Verhaeghe, who's about to hit 30. Verhaeghe maybe a little bit more line dependent. But well, you know, the thing with this Dylan Gunther thing is this is like a really awesome hot streak now that like, I'll be curious to see how it continues, but it does seem like right now, like Gunther is like way up there, like above a Hyman, above a Verhaeghe, above a bunch of people. But, I don't know, maybe Verhaeghe's safer You know, sometimes these young guys hit a wall.
I actually disagree. Like, yeah, maybe Gunther could have a hard year next year, like a little sophomore slump, even though it'll be his third season. But I don't know. I've seen enough from Verhage this year to be worried. I mean, if Verhage continues taking all these shots the rest of the season and is on track, then I'll tip the scales back towards him, I suppose, or consider
it. But what's the difference at this point? It's like you were just saying before how Verhage went through this long stretch without shooting, and that wasn't predictive of anything because now he's shooting a lot.
Well, maybe 5 or 6 games out of a 45-game season so far. So if Verhage shoots the rest of the season, then it's like, oh, whatever the issue was, it's over. But if
we need a new stat, Brian.
What do we
need to figure something out. Right now, we have a thing, right? We're like, oh, if a player is like not getting a lot of points, but they're shooting a lot, we're like, yeah, they'll probably be fine. Like, he's shooting a lot, it'll probably start working out. And then sometimes we go to like, oh, his on-ice shooting percentage is low. But like, when a player isn't shooting, we don't have something that like tells us, oh, he'll probably start shooting again.
We don't know why. Right.
Yeah,
but if a player
is he missing the net a lot?
No.
Is he missing the net, maybe?
No, the attempts are down too. We have shot attempts. We have unblocked shot attempts. We have all that info. Verhage's down in all of them.
Okay.
We don't know why he's shooting less, but if over 82 games, Verhage, like for 3/4 of the season, isn't shooting the way we expect, then I would consider that enough of a trend that I'd be worried about it happening the next season.
Okay, I want an intrepid listener to give us something new to look at. When a guy's shooting a lot, I want to know, is it unsustainable shooting? So I feel like we see Genther all of a sudden has like 5-6 shots every game. Maybe that's unsustainable shooting. Like, is it possible that that's just like unreasonable to expect to keep up those shots?
If it's out of Gunther's, if it's out of the line of his previous practice, if he hasn't been doing that all season long, I'm not counting on 6 shots a game from Dylan Gunther.
But I want something more than that. Like, you're just saying like anyone can just look at him like, yeah, he normally doesn't do that. And now he's doing that. So probably, but I want like, you know, for goals and assists, we have so many other things we can look at to predict it.
You want to know before the trend plays out. You want to know if the first 4 or 5 games of a heavy shooting or light shooting run are predictive of what's to come.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to like, are they doing it sustainably or unsustainably?
We need I'd love a crystal ball. Someone sent us.
No, not a crystal ball. A good stat. Someone's going to have it. Someone will come up with it. They're talking in the chat here, Schwab Squad and Jaber, about like posts and crossbars, but I guess that's included in shot attempts. Huh.
Yeah.
Something to think about. We have this long break now. Maybe we can figure some new things out. We should invent some. Brian, why are we've been doing this podcast for so long. We've never invented a stat. We've never we're not like contributing enough.
You actually did. Do you remember?
I had an idea for a stat. I didn't like actually go and like.
You were really close.
Work it out. I was thinking of what was that? I was combining PDO. No, what was I combining? Like, I was combining two things, like on-ice shooting percentage with something else. And I thought that could be a stat, but I forget now. I'll look into it. I have it written down somewhere. Okay, let's do our next hot streak here. I got hot here myself for a second. Washington. Well, Alex Ovechkin scoring a goal almost every single game. That's awesome, especially if you have him. I can't believe I didn't draft him. I drafted Matt Barzal over Alex Ovechkin. Can you believe it? Then I traded him. But it's wild to think I could have had Ovi. Ovechkin scoring almost every game. John Carlson getting an assist almost every game. Like, John Carlson's on a 6-game streak of having 1 assist every game. Also some decent shots. John Carlson not blocking like he used to. But he's like having a nice little season. I think for someone who we were thinking maybe he's like on his way out. Like, I think a lot of us weren't expecting Washington to be as good as they are. It's an understatement. So yeah, John Carlson really has done well for the managers who took a shot on him in their fantasy drafts. Not sure what there really is actionable here. Also, like, Tom Wilson is hot right now, getting a lot of points. Alexei Protas, I know he was like cold for a while. He was maybe dropped. He's gone hot lately. 3 points in his last 3 games for Protas and some shots there. At this point, I don't know. I guess at this point in my prep, I stopped like writing down like interesting questions to go along with these numbers. Washington.
This is the hot streak section, and those are some hot streaks. Way to name the hot streaks. Good job.
Okay, so in LA, I'll come up with something here. So in LA, and they talked about this on the most recent Short Shifts, Kevin Fiala has started getting hot. He sort of has this reputation of being a second half producer, kind of like what I was saying about Matthew Tkachuk. I think there's been some people who have like disproven it. So I don't recall actually what the truth is, but I do know that Fiala now has 5 goals in his last 4 games and a lot more shots than he was taking at the start of the year. So we'll see if that keeps up. That's, of course, been really helpful for Fiala's line mates, Byfield and Laferriere, who are doing well as well. Also, somehow Warren Fogel is on a little bit of a run here. This is the one that I want to ask you if it's, there's any chance this is going to keep up. Fogel playing with Deneau and Trevor Moore, who are like not anything too special, but somehow Fogel has 4 points in his last three games and like either four or three shots, even a six shot game recently. I like what I see in the stat sheet, but that's only like the last three games. Before that, he was doing nothing. So likely a blip, or do you think there's any chance Warren Fogel is something? And of course, this is assuming you can't get Byfield or Laferriere, who I would prefer playing with Fiala right now.
Yeah, probably a blip for Warren Fogel. You know, he's playing with Deneau and Trevor Moore, who, like, so Fogel is basically in the Arvidsson spot on that line, and that line has occasionally been productive and helpful. Not so often this year, but they do have a history of sometimes being worthwhile. So I'd say for that reason, you could consider Warren Fogel. I'd rather, he's probably the, I'm not sure if he, second person on that line I'd want. Maybe third. I don't know. Trevor Moore. Elon, you never mentioned this guy when you love him so much. 3 points in his last four games.
He's not my best friend.
Bunch of shots lately. Deneau has 5 points in his last four. So everyone here is doing well. Something like wild about LA is how much everyone is shooting. Like they were doing nothing. We have a patron in our Discord server. It goes by the handle of Artificial Idea. And he goes to a lot of Kings games, and he commented the other day like how painful the Kings have been to watch this season. And like I feel that, like I look at their scoreline sometimes, like, oh my gosh, like and that was the 2-1 loss to Anaheim. But going into that, the Kings had 15 goals over three games. But going into that, the Kings had 9 goals over 7 games. Actually, the Kings, I keep going back further and further into the Kings game log. Okay, now I'm looking at their last 16 games. They have scored more than 2 goals 4 times in their last 16, and 3 of those came in the last like 9 days. Like they just did it. So it's nice to see some shots from Kevin Fiala and Quinton Byfield and Alex Laferriere and Deneau and Fogel and Moore. Byfield, I'm not sure exactly what's going on, and I hope it lasts is about all I'm willing to say.
Right, but we can't predict it because we're missing a key stat that someone's going to develop for us before we come back from this break. Next hot streak over in Tampa. What a week for Brandon Hagel. 8 points in his last 4 games, had 4 points against Detroit, 2 goals, 2 assists, followed that up with 2 assists versus Montreal. Hagel, man, every time Hagel has a good game, this is like me being very egocentric. Like, my first thought is always like, I wish Gensel would do that. The guy who I picked super high, second round of Kakupfel. And Gensel's like, fine. Like, I know I shouldn't complain about Gensel. I should be happy. It's like, this is like, you know, your life is fine. You shouldn't complain. There's some kids overseas that don't even get to eat. So why are you complaining? Just eat your vegetables. You know, this whole thing. But like, I don't know. Gensel's fine. 54 points in 54 games. That's fun. But, you know, when Hagel has a week like this, that's another reason why I just lost. Hagel's up to 62 points in 55 games now, pacing for 92 points.
Yeah, Hagel is a legit, like, I don't even know that it's notable. Like, he's one of these guys at this point where when he's doing this, we just accept it. Like, it's not like a hot streak. This is just Brandon Hagel now. It's amazing. Like, Hagel has been, I was talking again on our Discord, so our patrons only Discord server last week, saying I think he's probably like a third round pick. Like he's a top 50 player at this point, maybe even cracks the top 40 in a draft. Now it has helped that Hagel has scored 6 goals in his last 6 games, on like not enough shots for that to be sustainable on 19 shots, I think, or 18 shots. So that's not like the best way to be hot, but honestly, Hagel's been so good all year long. He did this last year too. I mean, 75 point pace, but we called it sustainable. And this year, Hagel's shooting more. Something that I'm curious about for Hagel to see if he can grow. 7 power play points is all he's got this year while playing on the top unit for the most part. I wonder if he could get in on more, but it's okay. He's making up for it with 6 shorthanded points for Brendan Hagel. So fantastic player, especially in shorthanded points leagues, like where you'll get extra credit for those. That's me saying I don't know if it's a Brandon Hagel hot streak or this is just...
This is him.
This is it.
I mean, he hasn't even been on the top power play for a long stretch, but in the last game, Tampa went kind of nuts there. They had Point, Gensel, Cirelli, Hagel on one power play. Oh, Kucherov wasn't there. Okay. Scratch that. Everything's fine. Everything's just a little weird sometimes. But yeah, Hagel, yeah, barely any power play point. Like this streak, 8 points his last four games, none of them are on the power play. He doesn't need it. He's a star. Okay, next hot streak. Who should we go to now? Ooh, let's go to some guys in Chicago. Very curious to get your take, actually, on Ryan Donato, who out of nowhere is on the top line again, playing with... But remember last year? Was it last year? There was a year when like we were like all of a sudden... Yeah, it was last year. When Donato in preseason. It's like, he's going to be playing with Bedard. Quick, go get Donato. And every podcast like, oh my gosh, this guy's going to be incredible. And then he like didn't last there, and he was like, you know, up and down. He's having a good year this year. And all of a sudden, he's also just like Brandon Hagel, 8 points in his last four games. Donato had 4 points against Nashville, 2 goals, 2 assists. Followed that up with a goal against St. Louis with 6 shots. You like to see that. He's playing on the top line. We're up to now on the season. Like, the season doesn't even look that incredible, but like 37 points in 53 games. That's a 57-point pace, which crushes anything Donato's ever done in his career. So he's having a career year. He's 28 years old. Do you think he's someone, like, we don't even have to dive into, like, season-long hold, but is this, like, a kind of pause the pod-ish? Like, if he's available in free agency right now on a run like this on the top line, are you running to grab Ryan Donato, or is it for sure going to go away very soon?
I think I'm interested. I mean, the thing is that Donato hasn't even been with Bedard this whole time that he's been producing. He's got 21 points in his last 26 games or somewhere thereabouts, but I'll slice it smaller. 8 goals, 7 assists, 15 points in Donato's last 14 games, 34 shots in those 15 games, 8 goals. That's a 24% shooting percentage. So not quite all the way there, but I think for the first time in Donato's life, he's getting like, or at least NHL career, I should say. I don't know about, you know, Donato's whole hockey playing life, but in his NHL career, he never has seemed to get like a vote of confidence from a coach. He's always like been up at the top, top line or top power play, and then goes back down the depth chart and never reappears. But actually seems to be getting some compliments from coach lately, which is nice to see. And that makes me feel like, yeah, maybe this is kind of sustainable for Ryan Donato. I don't think quite in this way, but I wonder if he can be like a steady 55, maybe even 60-point player, if he can finally reach this upside. We've always wondered if he could just, stay in coach's good graces long enough to do it.
Yeah, it seems like when he gets the deployment, he does pretty decently well, at least for us. I don't know about for the team overall. Also, Teuvo Teravainen, he did this before. He currently has 3 straight 2-point games. I remember we talked about him on the podcast at one point. He had like 4 straight multi-point games, and it seemed like, okay, I guess we have to go and rush to get terrifying. And then he went super cold for a while. I'm going to guess it's not going to last, but I guess it's my job, as we often say, my fiduciary duty or whatever, to mention that, terrifying is red hot right now.
Yeah, he is.
You don't believe in it.
No, I'm with you. Like it's your duty to bring him up. Also, I'm not bought in that this is something that can continue.
You would take Donato over Teravainen?
I think I would. I'm trying to look for a reason to take Teravainen over Donato, and I'm not seeing one. Donato's got Bedard at 5-on-5 and the power play. Teravainen just got him on the power play.
Let's do a couple goalies now that are on hot streaks that might be available in people's free agencies. Over in Philly, Sam Arison is kind of pulling an Ullmark, just in like the team doing really badly, but Arison like saving them. Like he stopped 31 of 33 in the 3-2 win over Pittsburgh. This is a game where Pittsburgh outshot Philly by a lot, but Philly got the win, I think mainly because of Sam Arison. That's his third straight really great game. And this is, again, like he's letting in 2 or 3 goals, but like with a ton of saves, just because Philly's letting in a lot of shots and Arison is stepping up. He's going to be playing, I know, in this tournament. So I don't know if that's good or bad for him, because I know last year he kind of got ran to the ground, and at some point he just couldn't play well anymore because Philly had to play him all the time. And it seems like it's kind of the same situation. Like Fedotov hasn't been that good. Kolosov, that beat writer, said he's like the worst goalie he's ever seen. So I picked up Arison, Brian. It's my third goalie. For now, I'm considering him someone I'm going to hold for the foreseeable future, and I'll just ride a Skinner-UPL-Arison tandem, hopefully to the playoffs. But we'll see. I like a volume guy, and he seems to be talented. I think my main concern is just Philly's going to ruin him. Like, they're just going to play so badly that he won't be able to put up good numbers, but he seems like a good goalie.
I don't know that we've ever really given evidence that Erison's a good goalie, aside from, like, a nice run here and there. It's almost like a Vemelka situation, Elon, where, you know, the hot streaks really attract you, and then you kind of forget about them. Or you remember them, but like you forget, you're willing to look the other way for the rest. Like a 5-on-5, Erison's been bad this year. All right, 899 save percentage. That's bad. And that's just 5-on-5. That's not counting penalty kill. He's 14 points below his expected Fenwick save percentage. And then, you know, like you said, he's been better in the last month, which he has been, by the way, like a lot better. 932 save percentage at 5-on-5, 7 save points above expected. So that's like it's a huge swing. And it's kind of like a Jekyll and Hyde kind of move from Sam Erison. I think we've seen overall in Erison's career more bad than good. I'll keep an open mind, though. How old is Erison?
He's only 25. Like, this career is pretty short. Like, it was just last year and this year, pretty much.
Yeah. Well, he was not great last year. Like, I could say bad. I think.
But again, last year, I think you have to look at splits, like the whole narrative. And I mean, the thing is, the Philly beat writers, I got to say, as someone who's like watching tweets for retweeting to the website, is like, they're crazy. Like, the Philly beat
writers.
They're
a cranky bunch.
But they're like obsessed also. Like, when the player's doing well, they're like drooling over these guys and talking about how good they are. So like, I remember the vibe was like Erison is saving this team game after game, and then the wheels fell off. That's like the vibe I got from last season. And then this season, I guess he was struggling a bit. But it seems also like whenever there's like, quote, Tortorella also seems to do a lot more press. Or maybe Tortorella's like one of the few coaches that's willing to just talk about the players openly, and like he talks about the players that are bad and he says they're bad, and he talks about the players that are good and says they're good. Like, he loves Erison. He's always talking about how he wishes he could play Erison all the time, but he can't, so he has to play one of his other crappy goalies that he hates. So like, he thinks he's good, but I think it just like doesn't work out because Erison needs a rest. That's my vibe I get from Twitter, and you're getting, obviously you're looking at the numbers, but my vibe is that he's a good goalie that's always tired because his team makes him play too much or have too many shots against.
I'm open to that theory too.
But anyway, maybe a guy to look at in fantasy if you need the volume, because I think Tortorella wants to play him a lot. Also on Philly, Kuzmenko finally played a game. He played his first game with his new team and got an assist. And apparently people were saying he looked really good. But we've seen this before from Kuzmenko. He started really well in Calgary last year. He was actually like a really good, like kind of a sneaky playoff MVP last year, like fantasy playoffs. I remember Kuzmenko came in and did really well for Calgary. Kuzmenko came in this first game for Philly. He was playing on a line with Konechny. You like to see that. He was playing on the top power play. Like all the reasons point to Kuzmenko being someone you should target and add, except for it's Andre Kuzmenko and he's on Philly, which I reckon is why you shouldn't.
Well, I think maybe you should add Kuzmenko for a week or two. And don't get too attached, and then let him go when it stops. Because Kuzmenko does have a history of like starting hot. And so I wonder if this will be a hot start, or maybe this is just a purely luck thing. But I'd be open to that possibility for sure. And again, no, you don't want to build any long-term plans around Kuzmenko, because it's been a while that he's ever, or like honestly in Kuzmenko's career, I don't know how many times he's been like for sure rosterable for three consecutive weeks, say.
Okay, so the other goalie I want to bring up, Brian, that's been good lately, and I had to really like double check this. I was surprised, but Alex Nedeljkovic looking really good in Pittsburgh lately. And this is a guy who, you know, struggled a lot this year, and they, you know, they gave Tristan Jarry another chance, and he struggled a lot more. But yeah, the last four games have been really good for Nedeljkovic. Two goals against versus the Rangers, two against versus New Jersey. He shut out Nashville. He had two goals against Utah, two goals against San Jose. Like, TLDR, this guy's not letting in more than two goals for a while now. He's doing really well. He's helping Pittsburgh win some games that maybe they shouldn't. So kudos to Nedeljkovic. And if he's out there in free agency for you, maybe time to consider him. He's the, you know, we were thinking maybe, oh, they'll bring up Blomqvist, and like, who knows how they'll split it. It seems like it's clearly just Nedeljkovic is the volume starter. At least that's how it's been over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, I don't see why they'd go elsewhere. I mean, you know, the only reason I didn't start the season wears, like, oh, can Nedeljkovic be the volume star? It's like, no, they have Jarry, and that's probably who they want to get going. But now that the Penguins have given up on Tristan Jarry, at least for the moment, yeah, I don't see any reason why they wouldn't keep playing Nedeljkovic, who has continued earning starts. It's been a while since he's been, like, really consistently reliable, but Pittsburgh's willing to give him a shot. I am too. I added Nedeljkovic in the cupful last week. Got a couple key starts from him to help me win the week. And I'm going to hold on to him to see where the next few starts take him. I wasn't planning on like rolling with another goalie right now, but it's nice to have, like, he's basically a volume guy that you can find in free agency. And if wins aren't like a real important thing, they're always nice to have. But in your format, if they're not so important, that Nedeljkovic has that much more value.
Yeah, I guess you're seeing Nedeljkovic kind of like I'm seeing Erson, just like a guy who was there. I added him.
Yeah.
And he's playing all the games. The team's not that great. I don't like think like Nedeljkovic is that great of a goalie, but I would also grab him.
If you're clarifying that you see Erson the way I see Nedeljkovic, like if we're on the same, then I can get behind Erson the same way you are. Yeah.
It's like I'm planning to hold for the foreseeable future, as I assume you are, but if he starts to really stink it up, then you'll you won't think too hard about dropping. I'll mention another. You mentioned him already, Vejmelka. I'll just say that Ingram got hurt in the last game, and the coach like just said after the game, like they don't know. Like he was like, he's hurt.
He's day to day right now.
But that have you seen something new about Ingram, or where are you getting that from?
No, my first inclination from what I first saw for Ingram was that like, you know, it was like it was bad. He's hurt. Like same thing. Like we can't talk more about it because it's going to be serious. But I don't know. I didn't see anything that scared me more. And I feel like I did see something that reassured me, but I can't find it anymore.
Okay.
Yeah.
All I have is what's on Game Day Tweets. And I would trust that Shams would tweet if there was something new. So I think what we have to go on, unless Brian, you could find this other thing you saw. Turini said he's hurt and then he doesn't have any additional information at this time. So he's not sure if it's a long-term thing. That's like the latest that we have retweeted.
Yeah, that's not like terribly scary to me, to be honest.
Well, it sounds like they just don't have any information and they're not sure if it's long term. So that means it could be long term. So I don't know. I'm not. Anyways, whatever. We don't know. All I'm saying is that kind of like what I said before about Lankanen. Like, if you want a goalie, like maybe it'll turn out that Ingram is hurt. And then Vejmelka is going to play all the games. If you recall the last time Ingram was hurt, Vejmelka had a really good run. So something to consider. But also Ingram might just play because it's a nice long break. So we'll see if we find out more. I don't know when we are going to find out anymore. I do have to do a podcast duty thing here. Anthony Beauvillier is on a 3-game point streak and he took 9 shots in the last game against Philly. One of them got by Sam Erson, but 8 of them did not. And I'm not interested in Beauvillier myself, but I wanted to mention that for the listeners.
Worth mentioning. Thank you.
Okay, we're going to end with a couple hot defensemen, and then we're going to end the show. Brian, Morgan Rielly, out of nowhere, after we were... This is what makes me also feel like this is random, and like I really hope we're not just wasting our life trying to make meaning out of randomness.
Elon, is this the moment that you're understanding that hockey is like pretty random, and we're
like,
trying to play this game where we harness the random... If this is a moment, like... This could be the end of the podcast, to be honest, the way things are going when you're like, it's all random. We can't predict any of this. We don't have the data.
Well, yeah. I mean, look, like I like playing the game, but as far as the podcast goes, I come on here and I'm like, yeah, I guess I was like for a long time, like I would hold on to Morgan Rielly. Like he's had such a great track record. Like D is hard to come by. Then finally I was like, I guess you're right, Brian. Maybe you can let him go. And now all of a sudden, 4-game point streak, looking good. But he's not on the top power play. They're still doing 5-4 top power play.
Yeah, and Rielly, his points that he's gotten on this run, 3 of them came on the power play, 2 of them from the second power play. So that's not going to be something that sustains. One of them did come, it seems like he was playing on the top power play for a game.
Well, Mitch Marner was hurt. So
yeah,
it was that game.
Yeah, so he had a secondary assist on a John Tavares goal. The others he assisted on, Bobby McMahon power play goals, which, you know, are great and lovely. And McMahon's been a good player this year, but they're not going to happen terribly often. The other point Rielly got was a goal. I don't know. I basically am playing this game all season where I am determined to confirm that I was correct in calling Rielly a snoozer a couple months ago. I'm still not seeing, like, so you tell me if I am getting lost in that narrative.
I'm convinced.
Yeah. Okay.
Just so it's like Beauvillier getting three straight points.
Honestly, yeah, that's what it feels like.
Is it also like Ivan Provorov, who scored in three straight games? That was a nice little run for him with a ton of blocks, Romanov-esque blocks. And man, imagine Romanov getting those blocks and scoring goals once in a while. Provorov's interesting to me, especially because he's a UFA coming up, but also Columbus is in a playoff spot. So I was really convinced earlier in the year that Provorov's going to go somewhere else at the trade deadline. Now I wonder if Columbus, like, he seems like a pretty important guy on the team. He's not just like a loser. Like, I think a lot of people assume he's like a loser. Like, I know that you kind of give me that vibe that you think Provorov's like a big loser, but like, yeah, he's playing like 28, 29 minutes a game. Seems like he's a really important guy to this team.
Yeah, almost a half hour a night for the last four games for Provorov. And up until this point, 20 to 23 minutes. So yeah, seems pretty important to a contending team, which I'm not sure anyone expected Columbus to be. But for as long as they're in the mix, I think this is where we're at with Provorov is pretty helpful and useful to them. Not known for scoring goals, though. Those three goals are half of his total goals this season. They came on nine shots. Provorov's career high. Okay, actually, in Philly, his first couple years, he was scoring goals, but in the last little while,
we were loving him. I'd love to get that interview. Like, I would love for a beat writer to be like, hey, Ivan Provorov, remember when you were like really good and everyone thought you were like really valuable in fantasy and we're going to be like a 50-point guy with tons of peripherals year in, year out?
I would love someone to ask Provorov, remember when you were really valuable in fantasy hockey?
Yeah. Like, what happened? Why did you change?
Frame for a question.
Or maybe you could frame it a little differently, but it's like, what? Why did you go from being a guy who got a lot of points to not? When did that, like, how did that happen? Did you change? Are you worse? Are you playing differently? Or are you just not as good as you used to be? Like, I just want to know, like, what's the reason? Like, and maybe he would know the answer. He probably knows. He's like, yeah, I'm a little slower, so I had to change up my game. Or maybe he's like, I don't know, the coaches didn't like me playing that way. I'd like to know.
This is like the Elon searching for the meaning of life continues.
Also, by the way, I will mention that this Kirill Marchenko injury in Columbus, like, has not been kind to his, like, line mates. Like, Fantilli and Voronkov have gone cold since Marchenko's gone out. I feel like, you know, Monahan went out and was like, everyone still kept on clicking just fine. Maybe it was Marchenko this whole time who was the reason why that line was so awesome. So yeah, it'll be fun. Like, after the break, Boone Jenner is apparently going to come back, so I guess we'll have some line shakeups. I wonder what they're going to do. I guess Kent Johnson might be there with Fantilli and Voronkov. Maybe Jenner goes up there, shakes things up. Who knows? I don't know. But yeah, definitely a bad break for Columbus that Marchenko went out getting hit in the face with a puck while on the bench. Come on.
Bad luck.
And bad luck for me, because I have Fantilli, another reason why last week my team fell apart. Fantilli was scoring me a goal every game. All of a sudden, had like, what, one assist in three games, something? Not enough. Let's end in Buffalo, Brian. You mentioned Yuri Kulik has slowed down for you, but I want to start on the positive. Their defensemen, out of nowhere, are looking really good. Owen Power, well, like, Dahlin is always really good. He's been especially good lately. He's on Dahlin's on a five-game point streak, three of them multi-point games. So no surprise there. But now Bowen Byram is on a run of two straight one goal, one assist games. That brings him to 6 points in his last five games for Bowen Byram. And then, not to be outdone, Owen Power also is on a nice little run. No goals, but Power's been getting an assist almost every game. A very John Carlson-esque stat line recently for Owen Power, along with a decent number of shots and blocks. Are we at a point now where we want any of these Buffalo defensemen, or do you think Power and Byram will go back to just being like blah like they used to be?
Yeah, I think that's most likely, but I think we can still give Power and Byram some credit. Like, they've both had multiple stretches of relevance, and those stretches have lasted longer than they generally have in their short careers to date. So I think by any measure, Byram and Power are having a successful fantasy season, and it's always worth like keeping them on your watch list if they are in free agency to check in and see if you want to try and catch them on one of these heaters.
And with that, Brian, we've made it through the content here. So we're all up to date on everything in the NHL going into this Four Nations tournament. I don't know what the plan is for next week. I guess we'll find out if a bunch of players get injured in the tournament. Then I guess we'll have a lot to talk about. Otherwise, we're definitely not going to come on. I promise you, Brian, I'm not going to do a show where I'm like, Brian, I don't know. Eric Halla has 5 goals in the Four Nations tournament. Does that mean people should be adding him to their fantasy teams? Like, I assume we're all just going to assume that we're not going to take anything out of this tournament and help us make decisions in fantasy beyond injuries. So I guess we all just...
Please don't ask me to do that. It's basically, it's preseason, right?
Okay.
That's
how I would look at it. Yeah. So this is just a break. I guess for some people, it's going to be a lot of fun. For others, they're just probably not going to pay attention. I think whatever you choose to do is up to you and how you want to take in or not take in this tournament. In the meantime, it's going to be definitely weird to have all of these days in a row, starting with today, of not checking how my fantasy teams are doing. Especially, Brian, in our Keeper League, or the Dynasty, the Keeper Carlson Dynasty League, we're in the last matchup of the regular season. And the way we set it up is the matchup went this past week and then the 2 days after the this tournament. So we're going to have a long time to wait before we finalize who's making the playoffs, who's going to the different Constellation playoffs. We all just sit and I guess try out some other hobbies. I got a message today from my dad's WhatsApp group chat saying that this movie called A Little Princess from 1995 is really good. And then I checked on Rotten Tomatoes and it has a high score. So I think I might watch that. Probably not tonight because it's late here. Maybe tomorrow. So that's one thing I'll do with my extra time. How about you, Brian? What are you going to do with your extra time?
I'm going to probably... I don't know. It's a lot of pressure.
You're not going to be thinking about like ads and drops. Like when you're on your phone, what app are you going to open? What app, if it's not Yahoo or Twitter or whatever you use...
That's true. Maybe I'll just put my phone away for a little bit. Oh. Maybe I'll take the time to be curious and imaginative and, you know.
Oh, I'll be there. Okay, so remind me next episode to ask you where that, like what that led to. What your curiosity and imagination discovered or uncovered. But okay, hopefully everyone goes on their own fun journey over this next little while of discovery. In the meantime, still make sure you're subscribed to Keeping Carlson to get all of our content. I think we're going to work on some stuff. We're probably going to schedule a patron cast for next week. We're going to drop a matchup maximizer. I've been in talks with Jeremy to start looking at the fantasy playoffs. And I still have to do one also just for this next matchup. So we'll get some stuff out there to you. Make sure you subscribe wherever you get your podcast to Keeping Carlson, Spotify. Some examples. Apple. What else, Brian? Where else? Pocket Casts. What else?
Deezer. Is Deezer still a place?
Deezer?
Stitcher?
Oh, that's a place. I've heard of that one. But I don't know anyone. I've never heard anyone tell me that they use Stitcher, but I've heard it talked about like in places. Like I'll get like an email from a podcast host being like, make sure you're sharing your podcast on Stitcher. It's like, okay, if you say so.
I think once upon a time they were trying to make a play.
Are we getting comments? Are we getting ratings and reviews on Stitcher? I wonder how we're doing on there.
Yeah, don't know.
Someone let us know. Leave us a review. If you're listening on Stitcher, let us know with a 5-star Stitcher review and also message us to tell us to go look at it.
The whole review could just be, I am listening, so long as you include 5 stars with it.
Yeah. All right. Well, with that. Oh, you can come with a patron? Well, probably. I'm going to still go in the Discord, chat with the patrons. Good time, by the way, to, trade deadline in some leagues hasn't happened yet. You can start looking at your situation. Are you like going for, are you going to gear up for the playoffs now? Or do you need to gear up on like guys that are going to help you get to the playoffs? And there should probably be some good trade partners developing, right? Like some players have good schedules for the next 2-3 weeks. Some players have good schedules when the playoffs start. So you could find probably a good match and make some fun trades. So that's something you can do. But Brian, with that, let's cue the outro music. Go ahead, read us the credits, take us out of here.
All right, this episode of the Keeping Carlson Fantasy Hockey Podcast was presented by Dobber Hockey and powered by our patrons, including our super supporters, Patty, Ricard, David, Ryan, Connie, Tom, Steven, Ryan W., Zach, Andrea, Sammy, Caton, Philip, Aaron, Patrick, Brian, Roman, Top Cheese, Paul, Richard, and Nicholas. Thank you to our Cupful coordinator, Kevin Hebert and Jay Brew, who's helping coordinate too. Thank you to Elon and Champs for the amazing stream of fantasy news at GameDayTweets.com. Logos by BrandonWeave.com. Outro music by Pat Roach. This episode was researched with help from Dobber Hockey, Frozen Tools, Dobber Prospects, Natural Stat Trick, Evolving Hockey, Puckpedia, The Athletic, HockeyGoldies.org, Hockey Reference, Hockey Biz, Hockey Database, Elite Prospects, and Yahoo.
Great job as always, Brian. Looking forward to chatting with you the next time we get behind this mic to talk about whatever we have to talk about.
And in the meantime, we're going to do everything we can to make sure that fantasy hockey is for everyone.